This is UN and Africa, the Year in Review, a programme that looks back on some of the major stories making headlines on the continent in 2015. I'm Daniel Dickinson. Coming up in the programme, terrorist groups spread the reign of terror, and the world's newest nation is plagued by violence. But first, as Africa welcomed a new year, fears of the deadly Ebola virus continued to cause concern across several countries in West Africa. The United Nations Ebola Response Mission, UNMIR, was working with partners in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone to contain the spread of the virus, which ultimately claimed more than 11,300 lives. Elizabeth Philip recently sat down with Dr. David Nabarro, who served as the UN's special envoy on Ebola. She asked him to reflect on the unprecedented outbreak, as well as the difficulties of living as an Ebola survivor.
At the beginning of the year, the number of cases reported each week was of the order of 150. That's 150 people infected, of whom a significant proportion will not survive. Throughout the year, the number has declined, bit by bit, and often we had periods when we wondered how we were going to see an end to the outbreak, but it has steadily declined, with the number of cases reaching zero most quickly in Liberia, followed by Sierra Leone and then Guinea. But it's not been easy, and that's because the virus survives despite the fact that people are cured of the disease. And that means that it is possible for people to continue to transmit the virus even when they have been cured, and that leads to the possibility of flare-ups.
Can you tell us what life is like for them and their families and communities, and what kind of support do they need?
The people who have experienced Ebola are really extraordinary. They've been close to death, and they have come back, they've clung on to life, and they have recovered. But it is a terrible disease. It makes people extremely ill when they get it, because they lose fluid, they bleed, they have terrible fevers, awful headaches, and their joints, in fact, the whole of their bodies ache. It hurts. But when they pull through, are truly the heroes. They recover slowly, and as they get their lives back, they unfortunately have a lot of sequels that are not at all pleasant. They get continued headaches and sometimes also mental discomfort leading to severe depression. They get eye problems that can continue even after the Ebola has been treated and the patient has cured. The eyesight deterioration may even lead to blindness, certainly some visual impairment, in at least 10% of affected people. Then they get joint discomfort, and they hurt even when sitting, but certainly when walking, and they are unable to move around, which means if they're working in fields, they can't deliver the agricultural production that they would really like to. And perhaps most seriously, they experience terrible stigma from the rest of society. And it's not helped by the fact that there's an increasing recognition that some of them may still be carrying the virus in their bodies.
Terrorism was a major concern across many parts of Africa in 2015, with groups such as Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab and ISIL carrying out attacks in places like Nigeria, Mali, Kenya, Tunisia and elsewhere. In January, Boko Haram launched a number of particularly vicious attacks against civilians in northeastern Nigeria. In one such attack, the terrorist group reportedly used a child as a suicide bomber in a crowded market. Daniel Johnson brought us the story from Geneva.
Boko Haram's use of children to detonate bombs is morally repugnant, the UN's Human Rights Office has said. Ravina Shamdasani, spokesperson for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, condemned the terrorist group after violence in northeastern Nigeria.
The use of a child to detonate a bomb is not only morally repugnant, but constitutes an egregious form of child exploitation under international law.
The number of victims in the attacks that began on the 3rd of January cannot be verified because the area is in lockdown, she said. But the UN spokesperson added that it was fairly certain that mass killings and mass forced displacement had occurred in Maiduguri, Putiskum and Bagar. She said that girls, possibly as young as 10, may have been forced to carry out the attacks.
There are wildly differing accounts of the numbers. I mean, you're going from 100 to 2,000. And we haven't been able to verify that. I mean, one eyewitness was talking about how when he was fleeing, he was tripping on bodies the whole way. So clearly, a large number of people were killed.
Shamda Sani urged the Nigerian authorities to re-establish law and order and create conditions for an effective investigation. The UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says it has received unconfirmed reports of 150,000 people internally displaced by the attacks. Most of them have been taken in by host families, agency spokesperson Jens Larker said.
Information is quite sketchy. There is a complete lockdown. There is no access independently to the area.
An additional 11,320 people escaped the violence by running away to neighbouring Chad, according to latest UN figures. The Boko Haram militants, who control parts of northeastern Nigeria, have vowed to create an Islamic State in the region. Their insurgency began in 2009. Daniel Johnson, United Nations.
Beyond terrorism, throughout the year, violence plagued many African countries, leaving thousands dead and millions displaced. In South Sudan, the world's youngest country, civil conflict dragged on, leaving the nation in turmoil. In late September, the Security Council chamber was the scene of a tense meeting that saw the UN Secretary General call on South Sudan's president not to betray and disappoint international hopes for peace in the country. Deanne Penn led our coverage.
South Sudan gained independence in July 2011, but by the end of 2013, the country had descended into violence and turmoil following a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar. Tens of thousands were killed and more than 2 million citizens had fled their homes before a peace agreement was signed in late August of this year. President Kiir addressed the meeting via video conference.
When I decided to join the liberation struggle 3 decades ago, I did not expect to liberate my people in order to take them back to war amongst themselves. Therefore, I am determined to stop this senseless war and make sure that together with my brothers in the armed opposition, we will build a democratic, united and harmonious country by implementing the agreement.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon recalled the pride he felt attending South Sudan's independence celebrations and when the country's flag was raised at the UN General Assembly several weeks later. Mr. Ban spoke directly to the president.
I don't understand why this country has fallen into such a chaotic fighting and situation. I think it is now your responsibility and your brother, you said, Riek Machar, and leaders of South Sudan, to make your country put on a peaceful path. I think that is your political and historical responsibility as first president of South Sudan. And I really count on your strong leadership and vision for your country. We are here all to help you. I hope you will not betray and disappoint us.
The Secretary General also highlighted the need for South Sudan to form a transitional government of unity. Riek Machar, now head of the opposition, vowed to work for peace.
I returned to South Sudan, taking with me the reassurances that the world, through the UN, remains actively engaged in bringing lasting peace and development to our people. On my part and on behalf of the SPLM-SPLA, I pledge to remain committed to consolidate peace in South Sudan and the region. Doing so paves the way for development and prosperity in the country.
Meanwhile, the African Union, South Sudan's neighbors, and other concerned countries have been outlining their views on the way forward. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
And that's our Africa Programs Year in Review from United Nations Radio in New York. I'm Daniel Dickinson, and wherever you're listening, have a safe and happy end to the year.